Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in.
In a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court has struck down President Trump's tariffs, dealing a huge blow to his economic agenda.
What this says is that all of these people who've been saying that this is a Supreme Court that's in the tank for Donald Trump need to take a look at the facts. Yes, this is a court that recently has been giving the Trump administration some temporary wins, not letting lower court judges block all of his policies while the litigation unfolded. But when the court is considering the merits of these cases involving President Trump, he is not going to win them all. And this will not be the first case he loses in the court this term.
That's a CBS analysis of a ground-shaking event that happened Friday for the Trump administration when the Supreme Court ruled that his tariffs are illegal. The 6-3 decision centered on whether tariffs could be imposed under an emergency powers law. And the answer was a resounding no, which opens up a Pandora's box of questions about what's next. Here's KCBS.
Mark Sandalo. Mark, good to talk with you on this. We'll get to some of the effects of this ruling, but first of all, this is a big setback for the president.
Remember that Donald Trump has said as a candidate and as president, you know, tariff is his favorite word in the entire English language. This is what he has based both his domestic policy on, claiming that the tariffs are going to revive American manufacturing and completely alter the way that the American economy works. And he's also been his number one tool with foreign policy by using tariffs, not just as a trade policy, but, you know, to try to get Mexico to fight fentanyl. And anything he doesn't like other countries doing, he threatens them with tariffs. The Supreme Court has said, you don't have that tool. The Constitution gives that tool to Congress. And that's why it's such a huge upset for the White House right now.
So what does this mean for the U.S. economy and small businesses?
So the answer is, and partly my limitations, but partly this is the limitations of the economy. I don't know. Nobody knows. And that uncertainty is always a problem. I mean, there are going to be So let me tell you the big issues now. First of all, is whether or not the president, you just heard it's the International Emergency Economic Powers Act that the president had said gave him the authority to do this. The Supreme Court said, no, it doesn't. So the first question is, will the president find some other authority to try to impose those tariffs? But those come with restrictions. You know, the other big question is the Constitution's very clear. Congress has the power to set tariffs. If they wanted to, Congress could simply say to the President Trump, whatever it is, sir, you want, we'll do it. Just tell us exactly what tariffs on what countries you want, and we'll do all of them, blank check. But as much as the House of Representatives might do that, it's unlikely to happen with filibusters in the Senate. And secondly, members of Congress aren't necessarily supportive. There are a lot of Republicans who have watched their own constituents pay more money because, of course, a tariff is a tax. So this is both a political and economic mess right now. The one thing the uncertainty causes is U.S. companies. I mean, if you're trying to figure out, do I invest in, you know, foreign trade? Do I build a new car factory in the Bay Area thinking that domestic production will be cheaper than foreign production because of tariffs? You don't know what to do right now, and it's that uncertainty which is probably going to hurt the economy, and my guess is the stock market over the next couple of days.
Mark, this is not a president who likes to be told no. How do you think Mr. Trump might respond here?
It's hard to imagine. He complained yesterday he's waited too long for this decision. Obviously, this is not the decision he wanted. You know, Justices Alito and Thomas and Kavanaugh all sided with him. I imagine he is going to blast the Supreme Court for being out of line with what he says the Constitution. But look, the Supreme Court is the arbiter of the Constitution. He has no authority to impose these tariffs. And even if he doesn't like it, there's nothing he can do about it at this point except to try to find other ways to tax imports coming into this country. It's going to be really interesting to watch what the president says about this today.
I don't think he's going to be happy with Amy Coney Barrett.
Here's more from Adam and Jordana.
The Supreme Court thinks that the Trump emergency tariffs are flat out illegal. Now, we've been waiting this ruling for a long, long time. By the way, you are allowed to chime in, too, as we chime in. Back in November, when they heard arguments, I do know that the Supreme Court appeared skeptical of the administration's defense on its tariffs. At the time, Chief Justice John Roberts said during those oral arguments that levies were, quote, an imposition of taxes on Americans, and that has always been the core power of Congress. So again, this debate over what are presidential powers, what can the president do without the approval of Congress? And that has been an issue not just on tariffs, but on many, many things over the last several years, not just during the Trump administration, about executive orders, what the president can do, doing an end around Congress. And at least from this Supreme Court ruling, the Supreme Court says that no, tariffs, whether they're emergency tariffs, whatever their purpose, should come with the approval of Congress. And this is a significant blow to the Trump administration, yes, because tariffs have been kind of their hallmark, that this is a way to increase the coffers of the United States of America, that these other countries have been ripping us off.
And Tara Servatius has some opinions on what's really going on here.
Donald Trump's tariffs struck down. Basically, that's his economic policy. Gone. At least under the statute he was using.
And says essentially that this IEEPA, this law that grants the president emergency powers, did not, it looks like by this first blush reading by Justice, the Chief Justice here, does not give him the power to levy these tariffs that he's levied. The part of this initial opinion says the words regulate and importation, the president says that gives him the independent power to impose tariffs on imports from any country, any product, any rate, any time. These words, it says, cannot bear such weight. But it looks like what the primary holding is going to be is that these tariffs cannot be used in the way that the president had tried to use them. The president asserts the extraordinary power to unilaterally impose tariffs of unlimited amount, duration, and scope. In light of the breadth, history, and constitutional context of that asserted authority, he must identify clear congressional authorization to exercise it, meaning if he wants to do it, he's got to show that Congress has allowed him to do it. But they say IEEPA, this emergency powers law, contains no reference to tariffs or duties. The government points to no statute in which Congress used the word regulate to authorize taxation. And until now, no president has ever read IEEPA to confer such powers. We claim no special competence in matters of economics or foreign affairs, but we claim only, as we must, the limited role assigned to us by Article 3 of the Constitution. Fulfilling that role, we hold that IEEPA does not authorize the president to impose tariffs.
This was a case where the administration was at a disadvantage. IEEPA does not refer to tariffs, and tariffs are a big deal under the Constitution. It's a critical form of revenue that is left to Congress. And I thought that the administration did a terrific job in front of the Supreme Court. They could not have argued this case better, in my view. But you can't really escape that language. And right out of the bat, when that oral argument began, the Chief Justice John Roberts said, "This is a tax." And you could almost hear the administration gulping, because that's not what they wanted the justices to take from their argument. But Roberts and others clearly view this as a tax that rests with Congress. Now, there's a lot of runway still for the administration. The administration has other tools in its toolbox. It can actually impose tariffs under other statutes. So this night is hardly over for the administration when it comes to tariffs.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the whole tariff regime that Trump has done has been under IEEPA, making a whole year's worth of economic work null and void. And I'll admit, it's kind of embarrassing. For instance, right now, Europe's in the process of, considering those tariffs. This will scuttle the whole thing. But even worse than that is Brett Kavanaugh, Supreme Court Justice, points out there will be billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of refunds that need to be made here. The lawsuits will go on for years. And Jonathan Turley said, well, you know, look, Congress could clean this up right now if they want to. They could just turn around and give Trump explicitly this ability. But, I mean, Congress isn't even willing to stop the Democrats from stealing elections with the SAVE Act. They're not even willing with the SAVE Act to guarantee illegal immigrants aren't voting in elections, even though 15 states are literally not only handing them driver's licenses, but automatically signing them up to vote in federal elections in violation of the law. And Republicans in the Senate look at that and go, fine with us. We're not passing a damn thing. So Trump's not getting tariff authority from Congress. In fact, Trump's not getting anything from the Senate. They're trying to run the timeout to help the Democrats as much as possible because the Republican leadership over there is, quite frankly, evil. So, and quite frankly, has more in common with the Democrats than it does with the House, the Republicans who are elected there, or Donald Trump, or really half the country that voted for him. Am I terribly upset about this? I got to be honest, at first blush, no. The only real hope that we have in this country of becoming economically competitive again is energy and unleashing energy and cutting regulation. That'll get us a lot further, a lot faster than the tariffs will. And in some ways, I kind of felt like Trump was a little too distracted by the tariffs. Yes, you can really keep them from taking advantage of us, but you can only take so much advantage of us if we can compete with places like India and China because we have our energy production ability back. Quite frankly, the thing I'm most excited about in the big, beautiful bill is the 100% instantaneous expensing of new factories. That alone is going to tip companies into building here. But again, as Jonathan Turley said, the way forward here may rely on other different statutes. This is the only one Trump can use to claim tariff authority.
While the administration wades through that issue, Iran is flaring up again. Here's more on that with Tara Servatius.
President Trump giving Iran a deadline to make a deal as we could be on the brink of a major conflict in the Middle East.
The president is extending his timeline for Iran to make a deal from 10 to 15 days. That still puts it in line with the two-week time frame that Iran had given to address the gaps after the second round of indirect talks with the U.S. earlier this week.
What is the goal if there is a U.S. military strike?
Well, we're going to make a deal or we're going to get a deal one way or the other.
But with a military strike, is it to wipe out their nuclear program?
I'm not going to talk to you about that, but we're either going to get a deal or it's going to be unfortunate for them.
And you said to make 10 days. Have you given them a deadline firm to make a deal?
I would think that would be enough time, 10, 15 days, pretty much maximum.
Yeah, that's it. And this should have been done years ago, okay? None of this sit around, be silly, hold hands, give them plenty of time to build the nuclear facilities, get good and dug in, bring in thousands of Chinese scientists to help. I'd watch it all go down on the satellite. I mean, it's just so stupid. So stupid. And folks, we wouldn't be here if we enforced our own sanctions. And we did during Republican administrations. We said, no, you can't sell the oil unless you get rid of the nukes that you are threatening to kill us all with. And so in Republican administrations, the money would stack up billions of dollars where we would seize and freeze their assets. And they knew all they had to do was wait till a Democrat administration and the money would be either sent on pallets of cash or transferred to them and they could continue building the nukes. So here's where we are now.
The talks focus largely on Iran's nuclear program, but the U.S. also wants Iran to give up its long-range ballistic missiles.
You bet.
And Iranian officials maintain their ballistic missile program is not up for negotiation. The Wall Street Journal now reporting the president is weighing a limited strike to pressure Iran to make concessions. The outlet reports per people familiar, the opening assault, which, if authorized, could come within days, would target a few military or government sites, people familiar with the matter said. If Iran still refused to comply with Trump's directive to end its nuclear enrichment, the U.S. would respond with a broad campaign against regime facilities, potentially aimed at toppling the Tehran regime. Russia is urging restraint. A spokesperson for the Kremlin says Russia continues to develop relations with Iran, and in doing so, we call on our Iranian friends and all parties in the region to exercise restraint and caution, and we urge them to prioritize political and diplomatic means in resolving any problems. Remember, though, back in June, the president gave a two-week timeline for Iran to make a deal. Hours later, he gave the green light for Operation Midnight Hammer.
Exactly. And that's what the Israelis said earlier this week. They don't even think these negotiations are real. We're just getting stuff in place. I think that too. I do. Folks, the real story of why this is happening and why it's completely justified, I laid it out probably like nobody else will for you in my Battleground America podcast yesterday. A lot of people yesterday on our side still confused. Can't we just leave them alone? Can't we just let them do whatever they want? No, we can't. No, we can't. Not when you send three assassination teams to kill the president and his cabinet. No, we can't. We're done. We're finished. You are an existential threat. A leader group that would do that in Iran will absolutely send a shoulder-fired missile over our border. They will absolutely hit us from Mexico with nuclear fissile material. They will absolutely do what their military leaked in 2012, their plans to detonate a nuke over America to disable our grid. They'll do all of that and more. They got to go. They have become an existential threat. But folks, do you know why they tried to kill Trump? Because that's what this is about. That's what this is really about. This is about them feeling comfortable hunting us on our own soil with the tacit blessing of the Democrat Party. Again, Joe Biden never condemned, sanctioned, or even said to Iran, stop sending kill teams. Even after we caught and tried them. Why? Could you hear me winking? They like it. They're fine with it. That's why they were fine with Iran funding the street protests. We've been over and over this. But when did the real clash between Donald Trump and Iran begin? When did it begin? What is it over? Oh, leave him alone, Terry, leave him alone. NATO said a foreign conflict. And the founders said, okay. What did it start over? It started over Soleimani. Remember Trump killed Soleimani? One of the most fascinating, by the way, episodes in American history. I'll tell you why. Trump didn't have to kill Soleimani. It cost Trump politically to kill Soleimani. Why did he do it? Cold vengeance. Soleimani was the head of the Quds Force. And for sport, they hunted our troops in Iraq. We weren't at war with Iran. Anybody know how many of our troops they killed? Anybody know? I'll read it to you from Grok. According to Pentagon assessments, at least 603 U.S. personnel were killed in Iraq between 2003 and 2011 as a result of the attacks by Iranian-backed militants supported by Qasem Soleimani's Quds Force. How did they kill? By the way, that figure represents 17% of all U.S. deaths in Iraq during that period, primarily through the use of explosive form penetrators, EEPs, and improvised explosive devices, IEDs. I had a text yesterday from an injured veteran who said, yeah, they thought the thing that, you know, that caused me harm, he was part of one of these explosions, was Iranian. He said, I didn't realize. He said, I never put it together with Soleimani. That's how stupid Americans are and how dumb our media keeps us about our history. Trump went in, saw that and went, no, and killed Soleimani, who was the number two most powerful guy in Iran. Some say the most because he also terrorized the people of Iran. He didn't just kill us. The Pentagon has never released its estimate of the wounded, but it runs into thousands. You see them on the Wounded Warrior commercials where they're building them homes because their legs are blown off up to the hip, those guys. So no response or revenge was ever taken, not by Bush, not by Obama. And Trump said, to hell with that. And he killed Soleimani, as we should. You know why I think Bush and Obama never went after Quds Force and Soleimani? I'm right about this. Those wars have become such a profit center for contractors, ratline contractors, medevac contractors, people bringing the food, people bringing the resupply. And then those people donate to the Republican Democrat Party. Sorry, just the Republican Party, but then the Democrats got in on it. They didn't want to kill Quds Force or Soleimani because we'd have won the war. And then where's the political contributions coming from? That's the neocon mentality. It's why they hate Trump. Trump goes in with a clean strike. Now we don't need rat lines. We don't need $5 billion worth of contracts. Hey, write a check to our political campaigns later. No. I'm just going to hit him from the sky with a satellite. Bam, boom, clean. And Soleimani's suitcase goes round and round on the turnstile. No one else gets hurt. We kill him in an airport. That is what provoked them, the cold vengeance, to go after Trump and try to kill him while leaving the Democrats alone. So the Republican Party is at war with, I wouldn't say the whole party, I would say the Trump part of the Republican Party is at war with Iran. That's what it's over. Cold vengeance. And this is how it ends. We'll see.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.